Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Phew, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry. Terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
How are you doing, Met fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel the Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi. We're heading to the first Subway Series of 2025 as part of MLB's rivalry weekend. The Mets head to the Bronx to take on the Yankees, and Juan Soto will return to Yankee Stadium for the first time, only this time as a member of the New York Mets. He's returning since his World Series appearance last year, but a lot has changed since then. Juan Soto is a Met, and they will all be on the same field this weekend. We'll cover it all right here with two special guests that we'll get to in just a second. Terry Collins will also join us later in the program to discuss the team he skippered 10 years ago, and that was, of course, the 2015 National League champion New York Mets, and we will cover that month of May from 2015 in just a bit. So another good show with some top baseball experts coming on today, and we want to introduce them in just a second here, but before we do that, we want to thank everyone for the huge response to last week's show, when WFAN's Evan Roberts joined us for the first time. That show can be heard on all the podcast platforms or on YouTube as well. You can check it out there if you missed it. And all of our shows are archived on all the platforms. But the show with Evan Roberts was really, really cool. It was great to see him and Terry mixing it up a little bit on some things. So anyway, check that out. Evan Roberts episode with Terry and myself. It was really a good one. And as we will have a good one now. Before anything else, we're going to get right to the leadoff. Let's get right into the leadoff and bring on our special guests for today. Joining us right now is SNY's Andy Martino, who is also the author of The Yankee Way, a great book on the Brian Cashman era. Also with us, an analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, and she's also a great columnist for Newsday and podcast co-host of the first-time listener, long-time caller show, Laura Albanese. Laura and Andy, welcome back to the Terry Collins Show.
Hello, John.
How you guys doing? You ever do something like this together other than SNY?
I don't think so. I think this is this is our podcasting first.
This is our podcasting debut together, Laura. But yes, we do have plenty of experience chit-chatting on those chairs for a baseball night in New York. So I'm sure it'll feel like that. And you today can play the role of Sal Licata, John.
Ooh, oh, no, I can't go there. I don't think I'd ever be as loud as Sal, you know.
Few of us can project like Sal.
Or opinionated.
He does have strong opinions. But one thing I always say about Sal, although I don't know how we got to talk, why we're on a detour about him, but I will say that uniquely among radio hosts, Sal is good about listening to reporting. If he has an opinion and I say, actually, what I'm hearing is da-da-da, he adjusts his opinion based on information. And I always appreciate that. And then I don't think that's common in that world. So anyway, that's what I had to say about him.
I watch every episode of Baseball Night in New York, but I can't really listen to the radio show.
Well, talk radio can be tough, especially because it's very, very, very loud.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
It really
is. It's not my favorite medium either, generally
speaking. It is not mine.
Well, we have a big series coming up. Obviously, everybody's been waiting for this one. Subway Series is always one of the biggest events of the year during the baseball season. And this year, it's ramped up. The two New York teams will face each other six times this season, three this weekend at Yankee Stadium, and then later on during the 4th of July weekend at Citi Field. Last season, there was only four games, but the Mets won all four of them, which was kind of an eye-opener for a lot of people. First question for you both, Andy, then Laura. This Subway Series is even bigger with Juan Soto returning to Yankee Stadium for the first time since signing that massive 15-year deal, $765 million. Other than the World Series in 2000, would you consider this the biggest Subway Series matchup ever?
That's a really interesting question, John. I hadn't thought of it like that. I wasn't there personally for the first, but I imagine Dave Malicki and all that early on in those early matchups when there was such a novelty and the two teams playing each other in a regular season game. I've heard from people who have been covering these things from the 90s that, oh, there's this annual thing. It's not the same. It's not the same as it used to be when it was fresh and new. I've never felt any lack of energy around it. I love these things. I think there's always great energy in both ballparks. So, but I will say, like you said, the greatest ever. People that were there will talk about the first ones. But I think Soto storyline makes it pretty interesting because it is an unprecedented dynamic, as we know, and as we talked about with many people and in many places all the winter, is that the Yankees have never lost a star quality player like this in his prime because he chose to play for the Mets for similar money. This is an unprecedented figure in the history of the Yankees-Mets dynamic, Juan Soto. And so therefore, it certainly makes it a very big story, his return. Bigger than anything I can recall. Certainly bigger than when I was on the beat and it was, Dylan G starting against Hiroki Kuroda or whatever when both teams are kind of in a down period. This is bigger than that.
Yeah.
I mean, as a kid who grew up in Brooklyn during the time of the first Subway Series, I mean, Matt Franco hitting that go-ahead hit is still emblazoned in my brain. So it was a really special time for the city where I felt like it absolutely took over things. I mean, it was like Sharks versus Jets in the schoolyard. People are just like rivalry, just pure like vitriol. And other than the Subway World Series, this is probably going to be the closest that we get to that just because there is so much heat behind it. This city, there is nothing like this city when both baseball teams are good. So already you have that. And then you have the Juan Soto factor and the idea of him walking out there. Already there were, chants that I can't say on this podcast referencing Juan Soto at Yankee Stadium. And what I think is interesting about Soto is we've seen over and over in his career, but we certainly saw it last year, is that he tends to do really well under scrutiny and pressure. But this is going to be a really big test because I think it's going to be unrelenting. And in addition to that, I mean, last year attendance at Citi Field, I know that these games are at Yankee Stadium, but attendance at Citi Field last year wasn't that great, but Mets fans have been showing up this year. And I think they're going to be showing up in droves in the Bronx. So this is going to be an electric atmosphere. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. I can't wait for it, actually. And with Soto returning to Yankee Stadium for the first time since leaving the Bronx during the offseason, he's expected to get booed. He's expected to hear all of those chants and whatever else is going to be going on. It was kind of interesting to see Mendy rest him with this day off today as well before the Subway Series. That was an interesting move, but I think it was a good one. Do you think the Yankee fans are going to get on him more for him leaving the team or his performance so far in 2025 as a Met, or both? Laura, this time you go first and then Andy.
I still think it goes down to him leaving the team. As much as the Yankees have proven that, it's hard to say no one needs Juan Soto, but obviously they're doing very well without him. Obviously there are some holes in this roster. But they were burning his jerseys outside of Yankee Stadium. I mean, people were selling derisive jerseys with Juan Soto's name on them outside of Yankee Stadium. So there is that animosity, because I think, you know, for Yankee fans, it indicated a little bit of a changing of a guard that's been uncomfortable for them, because for the longest time, it was like the Yankee pinstripes, no matter what. That is the most important thing. It is the highest honor. And here you have, you know, a generational player who decides that the pinstripes aren't for him. And that's kind of a gut punch when you've been the organization and the Mets for so long have been considered the little brother, you know, almost regardless of record, essentially since 1986, since they won the World Series, or even 88, I guess. But they've been the little brother in New York City. And now you have this guy who says, no, I'm going to take it upon myself to continue to change the reputation. And so you have the Juan Soto factor, you have the Steve Cohen factor, because that's been a huge thing. Because again, now the Yankees aren't the only big spenders or the biggest spenders in New York City. And so when you put that all together, suddenly fans got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. Does it help them that he's hitting 255, which for a mere mortal is fine and for Juan Soto is not? Yeah, probably. But it's all going to depend on how he performs. If he goes 0-for-4, it's one thing. If he hits 2-3 home runs, like you've seen him do in recent weeks, then it's going to be something else.
Yeah, his performance, I agree, gives them ammunition, because it's not like he's coming in a great place where he can just say, oh, this will roll off my shoulders because I'm hitting, you know, 330 with 12 home runs or whatever at this point of the year. Yankees fans have something to taunt him with, the adjustment that he's been through. And the difference between his performance as a Yankee and a Met to date. But I do think, to your first question in that, John, that leaving is more probably to the point rather than how he's playing in terms of why they'll receive him the way they will, because Yankees fans have always had trouble with the idea of somebody leaving, because it doesn't happen that often. Their self-identity is, our team is a destination. So Robinson Cano comes to mind. When he came back through with Seattle in the early years of him being on the Mariners, it was really ugly, too much ugly. And that's what I'm interested to see with the Soto thing. Is it because the booing's good? Like in this instance, I don't like necessarily booing your own player to make him do worse. That doesn't make sense to me. Like when Yankee fans are booing Devin Williams recently, it's like, well, do you want him to do better or not? But booing the guy that rejected you to go across town, I feel like that's actually fair game and fun and part of the entertainment of it, as long as it doesn't cross the line into vile, personal, racist, like all the things that like jeering can go south. And with Cano, you heard some ugly stuff. So I think part of that is because Yankee fans just don't have a lot of experience with someone choosing another team. You're supposed to want desperately to wear the pinstripes. So that's the thing I think that'll fuel it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch what unfolds and how vicious the fans get at Yankee Stadium. And they can get ugly. You know, we all know that. So it'll be interesting to see. And it'll be interesting to also watch Soto and his demeanor and what his energy level is like when he steps into Yankee Stadium and up to the plate. You know, we haven't really seen that Soto shuffle as famously as he's done in the past. Maybe does he break it out for this? It's going to be
a storyline.
That would be good. And you know, to your point about his demeanor and his body language, John, Juan Soto, I don't think he'd be much of a poker player. He really wears his feelings on, and like to the point where if he's not feeling shuffly, he's not going to shuffle. If he's not feeling cocky, he's not going to act cocky. If he's feeling good, he's the peacock on the field. So, and we've seen so many instances. Like, remember that video that went around not long ago where he hit a home run and he didn't feel like doing the Mets little selfie celebration. Marte kind of had to make him, and Soto very half-heartedly did it. A lot of guys would just fake it to look good and not create the conversation. But Soto just, like, if you feel something, that's what you're going to see. So however he's processing what the Yankees fans are doing to him, I think we're going to see it on his face and in his body language. And that's one of the things I like about him is how human he is. And we're going to see that on display one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics say incredible, jaw-dropping, action-packed with savings.
You're talking about Thunderbolts?
No, Sergey. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market. A wonderful offer.
So?
That you can use to see Marvel Studios' Thunderbolts only in cinemas.
Woohoo! I'll get the popcorn.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with Compare the Market. Simples.
When you take out a qualifying product through Compare the Market, one membership per year participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
It, the frustration, you could see in him. It was in a game earlier this week when he struck out and he just slammed his bat on home plate, and that was telling. And you could just... You're right. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's not, the Mets are doing fine without him being like the Juan Soto that we all know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big advantage as well, as far as his performance so far with the team this year. And when he does get hot, I mean, can't wait for that, obviously, as a Met fan. But going back to the series last year, the Mets swept the Yankees, 4-game series. Now with the effect of Soto, the way the Mets are playing, the overall rivalry, Laura than Andy on this one, you talked about Big Brother a little while ago. Do you still, and then we'll get to Andy's viewpoint, do you still, do the people still feel that the Yankees are this Big Brother, or are these two teams now getting kind of equal when it comes to Big Brother?
I mean, at the end of the day, the Yankees are still the team that made the World Series last year, and I think that is, you know, a big indicator of who kind of has the advantage. Yeah. That being said, last year is last year, and this year is this year. Yeah. And the thing that I'm excited about the Subway Series is not just that it's like this crosstown rivalry, is that these two teams are extremely equally matched. You have one of the best offenses in baseball in the Yankees and the best starting rotation somehow.
Surprisingly.
With the New York Mets. And so kind of having the clash of these two titans is going to be really exciting. In addition to that, I mean, like having the two guys, Aaron Judge, who he had like a couple bad days in May, but otherwise has been absolutely incredible on one side of the fence. And you have Pete Alonso, who is having an absolutely monstrous year on the other side. I mean, we're looking at a situation where it's like, oh, it's almost like MVP versus MVP right now. I mean, that's probably not necessarily how the season's going to end, but in terms of who are some of the best players in each mm-hmm. league right now, we're going to see them on one field. So, I mean, how that's going to pan out, I do not think it's going to be as lopsided as it was last year, even though that was kind of surprising for a lot of people. I think it's going to be one of those kind of like bloody, bruising battles where everyone's going to come out of it just a little bit battle scarred.
Yeah, and I think that, as we all know, as people who watched so much baseball, one thing that the baseball season does not offer is any given day telling you anything about the big picture, right? So... how the Yankees and Mets fare against each other this weekend won't give us any clues. Like you said, Laura, the Mets dominated the Yankees in the Subway Series last year. One of those teams went to the World Series, and that was the Yankees. There was one year I was on the beat where the Mets were really not good at all, and they swept the season series against the Yankees, and then they went to Miami straight out of there. This might have been like 2011 or 12. Anyway, they get swept by the Marlins in 4 games after sweeping the Yankees. Baseball doesn't make any sense. We all know that. No, so I always try as a writer to resist making big picture generalizations based on what we see in any given game. But I agree with Laura that we don't really have – I agree with Laura on the quality of this matchup. So we don't really have to like really put any energy into what it will all mean, because it's entertaining enough in itself. You have two – teams that are absolutely plausibly seen in the World Series this year playing each other. So that's what we had last year too. Both teams were World Series caliber, although we didn't know it yet about the Mets.
No.
You just have some excellence on the field. People get hyped about the World Series anyway, but it's nice that this is a potentially the beginning, or in the Yankees' case, the middle of a golden era for both clubs at the same time.
Which is just great to see. I mean, wouldn't that be something at the end of the season and there's two teams standing, they're both from New York. That would be
easy to see, easy to picture this year. And that's
it
not
is.
often the case. Yeah.
No, it's not. Both the Mets and Yankees have suffered significant injuries so far this season, injuries that force both teams to really rely on much of their depth in the organizations. Andy, first you, then Laura. Who has the advantage right now, looking back at both teams, when it comes to the depth of the overall teams right now? Because they both suffered with injuries, and the Yankees.
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, I would say, although the Yankees' pitching depth is surviving the Gerrit Cole injury amazingly well because of Max Fried and Carlos Rodon and others who have been starting to pitch well in the rotation. The Mets' depth has become a real strength. When you're looking at guys like Luis Angel Acuña and Brett Beatty and Jeff McNeil kind of like on the last few kind of occupying some of the final spots on your roster, guys who could potentially be everyday players, in McNeil's case, of course, has been. That's strong depth that they have. The pitching depth are pretty evenly matched because they're both organizations that have become really good at finding and developing unheralded bullpen and starting pitching talent. I like where both of them are in pitching depth, but overall roster depth, I mean, the Yankees are hurting a little bit right now in some areas like third base, second base. They haven't replaced Gleyber Torres's bat for a number of, I mean, there's more, like, you can look around and find holes at the Mets too, but I the Mets have guys you can plug in, like I said, Acuña and Beatty and guys like that who are playing well that the Yankees would like to have that luxury and don't quite right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I feel like the Yankees are hurting a little bit more. I mean, first of all, they lost Giancarlo Stanton, and if Trent Grisham isn't having the year that Trent Grisham is having, which I don't think anybody would have predicted, and I don't know if necessarily it's fully sustainable, then that stings even more. Second base, third base, right now you have, Yorbit Vivas and Oswald Peraza. Vivas played over 600 minor league games before he even got into a major league game. So they're really just plugging holes right now, and they're surviving relatively well. That gives me pause, because how long can you really do that for? You have to hope that DJ LeMahieu stays healthy and is the DJ LeMahieu of a few years ago, not necessarily the DJ LeMahieu that had been playing hurt and trying to play through it and not producing as much. With the Mets, the one thing that I keep going back to, rotation has been fantastic, but rotation length in terms of the innings that they're pitching, that troubles me, just because I do feel like the bullpen is a little bit thin. Once you lose Danny Young, you lose AJ Minter, Edwin Diaz, while doing well recently, you know, some of the underlying metrics can be a little bit troublesome. So how is this going to kind of pan out towards the rest of the season when those arms get a little bit more tired? But frankly, that's the Yankees. It's more of a now problem in terms of depth. I feel like the Mets, it could be a little bit more of a later problem, which then you can kind of like look at the trade deadline and you can look at various other things in addition to how they develop their pitchers, which again, historically been very well, very good under David Stearns. And maybe you can find a few more diamonds in the rough. I mean, Huascar Brabham has been fantastic. I don't think anyone expected him to have a career year at age 35. So I have a little bit of faith that they're going to be able to kind of make up for some of these deficiencies.
I think, on that, Laura, you make a good point on later in the year, just in the sense it makes me think about last year, how gassed that pitching staff was in the playoffs and what they, because of what they had to do to get there. And you finally saw the extent, I mean, to the credit of the front office, it took until October to see the depth look thin. But pitchers do get tired out when they're asked over the course of the season to throw this much. And we're seeing that again with the Mets. So that's something down the line I agree to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that postseason for the Mets, you could just see everyone was taxed, everyone was tired, everyone was done, and they just gutted through it, but they just couldn't close the deal. So we'll see what happens this year. But it's an exciting thing to even speculate on right now, because it's very exciting to see both of these New York teams doing some amazing things so far this season. You both cover both teams extensively. There's no doubt about that. As journalist, do you get amped up for a series like this, considering that you're both journalists? And do you get excited when the Subway Series is here?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, we both, sure. I mean, you have to appreciate when you're doing something noteworthy, right? Like, I was like amped up to be at the World Series at Dodger Stadium last year. It's a different kind of amped up because we're not fans of either team. So But if you don't appreciate being in a big event like that on a, like a visceral level, it's probably time to stop. Right. It would be unprofessional to be like, so excited that I show up in my, I don't know, I don't have an Alonso jersey, but sent it or a Judge jersey or something, whatever, but we find our own way to get excited. I will be leaving. I'll get in my car tomorrow on the way to Yankee Stadium with a little bit more of a giddy up and go than I would in a normal game. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, like at the end of the day, like as much as it is a job, it's still a really cool job. And if you're not enjoying it, then as Andy says, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
For a game, like the storylines are so cool. I think that's what I do get excited about. Like you go there and there is just a palpable tension in the air. And to be able to kind of convey that through the stories that you're writing, through the reporting that you're doing, is fantastic. It's so, so much fun. Again, the storylines write themselves. I have a playlist on Spotify of what would be my walk-up music if I was a baseball player. And I'll just put that on my way to the ballpark. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm not going to screw this up.
Do you really have that?
I do. Gosh. Pinball Wizard is my number one.
Oh, awesome.
You know, that's a sneaky, strong walk-up song.
Thank you.
You'd have like the virgin, like that electric guitar. Yeah, stepping in. Yeah. I like that. That's strong.
Thank you.
Yeah, the walk-up songs isn't something that the Yankees really take advantage of, you know, more than the Mets do. I mean, isn't it more traditional that the Yankees don't have all of these like sing-alongs like the Mets fans are doing?
You know, I've just seen it. It developed with my girl late last year with Lindor, and I think this is one of the things that's unique, John. It's about the Met environment right now. And look, the Yankees, they pack it in better than the Mets do still. Random Tuesday against whoever, and the place is full and loud. So nothing to – I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that environment at all. It's one of the great environments in sports. But the Mets are doing something right now that's a little bit more outside the box and new and edgy and interactive. The songs are part of it. I just went to my first Premier League game this past weekend in Liverpool, and they are singing each player has like a theme song in soccer, and the fans are singing all through the game at the players. Every guy's got, and whoever's got the ball, they're singing a song. And there's nothing like that in American sports. But if there's something like it, the Citi Field vibe's actually kind of inching in that direction, which is pretty amazing. It's not like they have a song for everybody, but they've got one for Lindor, right? And so, yes, it's definitely a Met thing how that's becoming big. Every player at Yankee Stadium has his walk-up song, but it's not as... There's a back and forth. Yeah, there's a back and forth happening between fan in the seat and player on the field at Citi Field right now that's pretty unprecedented from what I've seen in baseball.
I absolutely love it. You go from My Girl to Layla, which is Pete Alonso. And then you have Brandon Nimmo's, which is like, on my worst day, I'm a child of God. And everyone starts singing along to the song that no one knew about at all. I think even Matt's wife sings it.
Oh, is that right? That makes sense.
Yeah, it's picking up a little steam, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, so it's a fun environment. Although I will not disparage at any point in time Luke Weaver coming out to Dreamweaver, which is a good one.
That's a real good one.
Alonso has an interesting approach about it. He put some thought into it. Last year he was coming out to Zach Bryan, which you'll appreciate being in Nashville. And he kind of introduced me to Zach Bryan through that song. I knew what it was. I knew who he was, kind of. But I was like, Pete, what is that song? It's really good. And he's like, oh, that's Zach Bryan. So I got into it more. And then I started to look forward to hearing it when he came up. And then it stopped. And I was like, Pete, what happened to your Zach Bryan song? And he goes all gruff. He's like, it ran out of hits. So he changed it.
There you go.
No more hits in that song.
He changed to American Pie, I think.
Is that when he from Zach Bryan to American Pie?
Yeah,
he got all these hits out of Zach Bryan. Good, so he moved on. So they think about this stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny that I think for the first time now you have a ball player, Lindor, playing like DJ because he's now alternating songs per at-bat with Ain't No Mountain High Enough and My Girl. And the fans are kind of taking to Ain't No Mountain High Enough a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his interview when he talked to the press about how it was just – it's vibes, you know?
Yeah. Which is unique to this group, this team, that fan base. It's all congealing right now into something. Started last year and they picked it right back up. It's definitely different for baseball in a great way. But we're in the other ballpark. This year, where it's just more full, but also more sour. Yankees fans have the curse sometimes of having had so much success that anything else is disappointing. And there's like an edge to that that can be tough for the players sometimes. And Citi Field's lately been a little bit more positive.
Yeah, it's been a great atmosphere. I can't wait. I haven't been to a game, at least I've been down in Florida, but not in New York yet. And I'll be up first week of July, second week of July. I'm going to be in New York for 3 weeks, you know, because I'm not going to miss Subway Series at home, and I'm not going to miss the David Wright ceremony. And I just can't wait to get up there and take advantage of my quarter season plan that I still maintain after living in Nashville for 25 years. I still am a season ticket holder.
You're diehard. And David Wright Day will be special, I'm sure.
Yeah, I can't wait for that for sure. So, Subway Series is going to be rocking. Can't wait to see it. And I do want to kind of pivot a little bit because there was big news coming out of baseball in Commissioner Manfred's office. And so I'm going to turn to a non-Subway Series question for you both to finish it up here today. Commissioner Rob Manfred's announcement that all-time hit king, the late Pete Rose, has been removed from the lifetime ineligibility list, the banned list from Major League Baseball, potentially opens up the door for him and others to be voted into the Hall of Fame next time the Classic Baseball Era Committee meets in December 2027. Laura, you wrote a great column this week in Newsday about Pete Rose and the commissioner's announcement, and you're doing a deeper dive into Rose after Mets manager Carlos Mendoza also discussed it at his press briefing. Talk to us about the column and how difficult the situation is going to be for the game of baseball. And then, Andy, I want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I really warred with this one because at its surface, I agreed with the commissioner's decision to take Pete Rose and all 17 of the deceased players on the ineligible list off of it, because essentially they're on it because they don't want these players to taint the sport. But you can't really taint something when you're no longer alive. So I think that is valid. But when it comes to Pete Rose, just because he is eligible for the Hall of Fame, I do not necessarily think means that he should be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think when you talk about Pete Rose, you need to tell the whole story. And it was interesting to see because, you know, immediately on Twitter, people were like, I can't believe that they waited until he was dead. He needs to be in the Hall of Fame. He's the hit king. And, you know, he never bet against the Reds. But when you look a little bit more into it, the attorney who wrote the original report, John Dowd, said in an interview in 2002 that he personally believed that Rose did bet against his own team, which I think is a huge, huge knock in terms of whether or not he should be allowed in the Hall of Fame. In addition to that, Rose himself admitted to having a sexual relationship with a teenager. And when you look at the person as a whole, there is still a character clause. There is still sportsmanship. There is still integrity. There is still character. That being said, I will admit, everyone knows, Cooperstown is full of sordid characters. Cooperstown is full of people who did really, really bad things. And at its essence, it's also a museum. So it's kind of hard to leave out a person who shaped the sport in what is a museum. So while I don't necessarily think he deserves a plaque in Cooperstown, I do not mind the idea of having something there that tells the entire story of Pete Rose, the good, the bad, and the very, very ugly.
Let's very thoughtful, and I also liked your column on it, Laura. I would say for me, I disagree with the commissioner's statement that when he said that you can't be a threat to the integrity of the game once you're dead, basically, I strongly disagree with that because you've already – gambling is the one thing that can take down the entire enterprise of sports. We have to know that it's an honest competition when we're watching it, or else the thing falls down like a Jenga game or a house of cards. It doesn't have any meaning. More so than steroids, more so than sign stealing. If people have action on the game that they're playing in, there's no value to the game, right? So that's why I think it deserves the baseball death penalty, like Shoeless Joe Jackson had for all his years, like Pete Rose had. I understand that being in the Hall of Fame is not going to make you happy if you're already in the ground. So they've been pretty harshly punished as it is. But I think it's got to be a zero tolerance thing because otherwise – the slope is slippery enough to unravel the entire sport, the entire enterprise, which is based on competitiveness. And if you bet on your team, it's just as bad as betting against it, because it's just, you got action on the game. It can affect a lot of things. You're using your inside knowledge. You might be making decisions even in a winning game that corrupt the integrity of it. So I think that once you've done that, the punishment has to be so severe and so lasting as to disincentivize anyone from doing it again.
Yeah. It seems like Manfred has kind of washed his hands with it and kind of punted it to the committees and like, all right, I'm done. You know, I got a lot of heat. I got a lot of pushback from even President Trump was in communication and tweeting about Rose and giving him a pardon. I mean, you know, and then Manfred does this, and is he going to get in the hall? Is he not going to get in the hall? You got to look at the person as an individual as well. I watched that HBO documentary on him and opened up my eyes to a lot of things. And when I was younger, I mean, Pete Rose was just an amazing player to see him there. And I watched him live many times. I was at the 73 playoffs when there was, his fight with Buddy Harrelson and then him hitting the game winning home run. So, I mean, there's a mixed emotion for Rose, but he never showed remorse in so many ways. And he did lie about his involvement. But the thing that gets to me as a bit hypocritical is the amount of money all sports are getting from sports gambling sites. And
I wish that weren't happening.
I know. I'm like, it's just so I can't think of another word but hypocritical. I mean,
100%. Major League Baseball has three partnerships with three different betting companies. There was a Simpsons episode that came out, and they made light of it in the way the Simpsons does, but it really spoke to the truth of the matter, which is like you could barely walk without someone asking you if you want to bet the over under on how many fly balls there's going to be in a game.
I know. It's troubling.
It's infuriating.
It bothers me that my children can't watch a World Series game without being exposed to the betting lines, and therefore, I didn't even know what that was when I was a kid. So all kinds of – I agree. I don't like that at all. I understand that this is a business and that was an area of growth that they wanted to get into. I see that perspective, but I don't like it either. But it doesn't change for me. That hypocrisy doesn't change for me my fundamental opinion that it has to be the worst possible penalty for ever betting on a game in which you participate, because then you just, again, if five people did, if five people around the league were betting on players, umpires, coaches, managers, all of a sudden it's like, well, what is Major League Baseball could cease to exist. It won't have any value. It won't have any meaning. Right.
Yeah, with my involvement in pro wrestling, I wish there was betting back in the day.
you're saying you might have known where to go.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point.
You're saying it's not real?
Wait a minute.
It's predetermined. The injuries are indeed real.
The injuries are real. That I believe.
That's true. Yeah, I can't believe what some of the guys put themselves through. But anyway, that topic is going to be one I think is going to kind of be in the forefront until they make a decision on this, and they'll be back and forth on who believes he should be in, who believes he should not be in. And but I think Manfred totally punted it, and now it's out of his hands, and we'll just have to now watch and see what's going to happen on the Pete Rose situation. Well, I know you're all amped up for the Subway Series, and of course the season's exciting for both of these New York baseball teams. We'd love to obviously have you back again soon. I always enjoy talking to both of you, and this for the first time, minus TC, unfortunately, but it would be good. Now, he's talking about, like, let's put together a roundtable of journalists and a couple of players to do a couple of deep dives. So that's something to really look forward to, maybe as we get deeper into the season here. But it's always a pleasure to see you both.
All right.
Thanks
John.
For having me.
All right. Thank you. Well, that was great to have both Andy and Laura on, the two of my favorite people in the business covering the game that we all love. And they had some great insights on the Subway Series and also on the Pete Rose situation. So always a pleasure to have both of them with us. Now we're going to talk to you about some of the updates for Tunnel the Towers. Of course, they are always very busy, and especially in the month of May because of Veterans Day coming up. The Tunnel Towers Foundation had quite a day on May the 7th. It broke ground on its newest Veterans Village. There must have been 1,000 people there for the ceremony over at the Jersey Shore. The facility in Bayville will house more than 120 veterans, and like the other Tunnel the Towers veteran villages, this is more about than just putting a roof over someone's head. It's about providing them with comprehensive services, which allow them to reintegrate into society. We're talking about things like job training, benefits assistance, mental health counseling, and more. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is planning groundbreaking later this year for similar complexes in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Birmingham, Alabama. And in recognition of Memorial Day, Tunnel of Towers will be delivering 25 mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families in 19 different states. This is part of the foundation's pledge to honor America's greatest heroes when they die or serving our country. And if a service member is killed in the line of duty and leaves behind young children, Tunnel of Towers will make sure their family has a forever home. The foundation is holding two ceremonies this week when Charles Nord was killed in an Army Black Hawk helicopter crash in 2019. His wife, Kaylee, was pregnant with their second child. Tunnel to Towers is holding a ribbon cutting at their home in Minnesota, and Deputy Sheriff Jamie Morales will have a specially adapted mortgage-free smart home dedication in Kentucky. Morales was paralyzed by gunfire during a shooting in 2018. These are the two latest examples on how Tunnel to Towers takes your $11 a month donation and changes lives. Please help by going to t2t.org. We will be back with Terry Collins after this word from the New York Mets' Brandon Nimmo on behalf of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
I'm New York Mets outfielder Brandon Nimmo. I have great respect for the work Tunnel to Towers does to support our first responders and our military. These are the people who keep us safe. You can join Tunnel to Towers in their mission to do good. By donating just $11 a month, go to t2t.org for more information on how your donation can make a big difference.
All right, now it's time for another segment that we have called... very lovingly, Tears of Joy, a 10-year anniversary of the 2015 New York Mets. And right now we're going to go over the month of May. The 2015 New York Mets were looking to build off the impressive month of April heading into May, coming into the month with an impressive 15-8 record, including an eye-popping 10-1 record at home. This Mets team seemed to be different from the others that Terry managed dating back to 2011. However, the Mets struggled to maintain their dominance, compiling a 13-15 record, losing the division lead to the Washington Nationals. It seemed like the Mets were going to be in a season-long fight for the NL East. Although the Mets lost the division lead, the month of May proved to be a critical month in shaping the direction that the Mets were going to take in 2015. And Terry, let's start off with the good. Let's start off with the debut of Noah Syndergaard.
Yeah, very impressive. You know, John, we knew we had some great young pitchers on the organization. You know, we obviously had brought up Harvey. We had brought up DeGrom. We brought up Rafael Montero. We brought up Steven Matz. Jeurys Familia has become one of the best closers in the game in 2015, starting in April. We named him the closer. So we knew we had good young talent. Now it was all about, you know, making sure they could be consistent. They could go pitch every fifth day in our lineup. But, you know, so in April, things looked, you know, dynamic until all of a sudden, which we see happens, there were injuries that came around. And then it forced us to call up Noah Syndergaard. And, man, I'll tell you, that first game, even though, you know, he didn't go deep in the game, you saw that 101-mile-an-hour, 102-mile-an-hour fastballs that he possessed and said, we got to be able to rein this in, get command of that fastball, and this guy's going to be dynamic, which he turned out to be.
Yeah, we knew there was something special with him, even watching as a fan, and there was something about him. You're like, this guy's going to be good. So you can understand why the Mets made that trade to get him. On the horizon, too, you talk about Noah, but then there are Steven Matz, there's Michael Conforto. Matz was right around the corner, these guys dominating AAA Las Vegas with his fastball and curveball. And Matz seemed to be destined to be called to the major leagues at any time. The Flushing faithful would not have to wait too much longer. Matz would make his debut. And then the following month, Michael Conforto. So tell us about the debuts of those two young men.
Yeah, I mean, we go back, and I distinctly remember Steven Matz's first game. I think it was against the Cincinnati Reds in Citi Field. Started the game, and second baseman Phillips for the Reds, I think he had a home run and needed the first or second pitch of the game off Steven Matz, and that might have been the only hit they got for five innings. This guy had showed poise, command of his fastball, command of his curveball, which was outstanding. Threw a changeup, also got three hits in the game. So yeah, it was just one of the great debuts. And we said, wow, this guy is going to be really, really good. And, you know, like I said, as what happens, his second start, just as great against the Dodgers, and then hurt a lat muscle and missed quite a bit of time after that. But Steven Matz came up and, again, showed all the Mets fans that, man, I'll tell you, the future is bright.
Yeah, it was one of the most emotional games, his debut, especially with his family there and his granddad. And you see those camera shots to this day with that whole family celebrating. And the fact that not only pitching, but the offense he showed and the hits he got, it was a magical day. It was a magical day.
I mean, he's such a great athlete and still is. But, you know, be just so athletic. But his, you know, be pitching in front of your hometown with your family there and all, who knows how many friends, and to be able to keep his poise like he did in that game after the first or second pitch of the game, incredible. That's when I said, boy, this guy's got a chance to be really good.
Yeah, and that was a great debut. And, of course, some of the bad things that happened, the team was missing its captain. David had been injured, took a step back. His replacement, Eric Campbell, struggled to fill the captain's shoes. Like, who could fill David Wright's shoes? There's nobody.
Talking about pressure on the guy.
Oh, absolutely. But missing David the way you did in his leadership role, and, of course, he started coming back during the season, and then he finally came back to play. That had to be rough for the entire team, you know, when their captain went down like that.
Yeah, it was. And again, there are times, John, you can sense things on the team. And when we lost David, even though we still had, you know, Granderson, but I really thought the addition of Michael Conforto, he and David were very, very close friends from their days in Virginia together. Michael just kind of fit in as kind of running the clubhouse. And that's when we started the ceremonies about, after the game was over, awarding a belt to a guy who was thought of to be the most valuable player in that particular game. And it became, you know, so important for guys to win that. I'll tell you should have saw some of the at-bats, you know, guys who put on near the end of the game knowing they may win that belt. And I thought that with Mike, that Michael and David, who put the thing together, that was one of the great moves we did at that time.
Yeah, certainly did. Because I remember that. I remember pictures with guys with holding the belt, and that's pretty special. Washington Nationals started to come back in the month of May. Bryce Harper finally seemed to be the player everybody expected him to be. Won the MLB Player of the Month Award for May, and the Nationals rotation headed by Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg and Jordan Zimmermann were more experienced than the Mets rotation at the time, though the Mets took two or three from the Nats to begin the season, and Nats dominated the Mets in Citi Field to open the month of May. So you guys knew that you were in a dogfight with this team, and you kind of felt that this was going to be the matchup for the rest of the season with the Nationals.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That was if you were going to win the division, you had to beat the Nationals. That was going to go through Washington, and that great pitching staff they had. And like you said, Bryce Harper, and he was only a piece of that. They had such a good offensive team, and he was such an electrifying young player that you knew had your work cut out for you. So kind of was something that, you know, no matter what day you played, you kind of check that box score to see, because you didn't want the Nationals to get too big a lead on you. And that's what kind of one of the things that kept us going, was knowing we had to stay close until we got our team in place.
Thank you, Terry. Tears of joy, 10-year anniversary of the 2015 National League champion New York Mets. We'll get to June next month. So, Terry, thank you so much for that.
You bet, John.
Another great segment with Terry Collins talking about May of 2015. So all season long, we're going to continue to cover each and every month that was part of that amazing season in 2015. So we'll never forget it right here at the Terry Collins Show. We look forward to more of that interaction with Terry on the 2015 season. And it was certainly magical for sure. Now it's time for another amazing Hero of the Week brought to you by Tunnel to Towers. And in this segment, we honor retired U.S. Captain James Howard, a recent recipient of a smart home courtesy of the foundation. Let's get to that right now.
My name is James Howard, and I served in the U.S. Army.
So I spent most of my time in Iraq during my time in, and yeah, I had a couple combat injuries. One in particular, we were on foot and I was hit by four 155 millimeter rounds about 10 feet from them. The impact alone just kind of damaged my neck area, broke some bones. We caught some shrapnel and it rung our bell pretty good, but we were thankful to walk away from that. So I medically retired in 2010. I had another stateside injury where I was working out and had a swimming accident where I damaged some of my C-level vertebrae on top of all the damage I'd already done. So left me a C5 quadriplegic. Tunnel to Towers came in and gave me and my family a home that has just been a life-changing gift that we're forever thankful for. A lot of the accessible features that, you know, some people will take for granted, you know, taking a shower, I can get in the shower and they have the handheld shower unit that can help me. I remember the many years after I was injured, you know, I had a bucket to use over the bathroom or a shower spigot out on my deck. So I come from a family, my father was in the 82nd Airborne during Vietnam, and my grandfather was on D-Day with the 82nd Airborne as a gliderman. 9/11 just, you know, ignited that passion to continue to serve. You know, we got hit on our own soil, and it was time to go over there and serve and to make things right. So I can't begin to thank Tunnel to Towers for everything they've done for our family. Tunnel to Towers supports America's heroes. Please donate $11 a month at t2t.org. Never forget.
Before we wrap it up here, we'd like you all to like, share, and review this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you watch or listen to this show. Your support by liking and reviewing the show helps a great deal. You can subscribe to The Terry Collins Show on all podcast platforms. And on our YouTube channel, go to youtube.com/ The Terry Collins Show. And as I mentioned previously, all the shows that we've done over the past two seasons are archived everywhere. And we have a bunch of what we call shorts up there. So you could find little clips of some of the highlights of all the shows that we've done. And we really appreciate all of the support you've given us there and the likes, the shares, and the comments that you make really, really are appreciated by us and by Terry. We also would like you to check out one of our favorite programs, Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. On this week's show, Jay brings on former Met and Yankee David Cohn, who talks about why he was not shocked that Juan Soto chose the Mets over the Yankees. That's Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. Thanks to the Terry Collins Show creative director Marsh and our researcher Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time.